welcome back to our latest Fraser Valander podcast. I'm Hannah Randolph, an economist here at the Institute, and I have with me today FAI Director Marius Boge and Deputy Director João Sousa to talk about the Scottish budget. So we've just released our budget report ahead of the Scottish budget, which will be presented next Tuesday. And the report starts off by saying that this is one of the most challenging fiscal backdrops since devolution. So Mari, I was hoping that you could kick us off by talking about why that is.
So this is certainly one of the most challenging budgets that the Scottish Government has had to present since devolution for many reasons. We calculate that the gap between what the Scottish Government would like to do and what they're likely to have funding to do is probably in the region of about £1.5 billion. And that means that the Deputy First Minister on Tuesday, when she presents her budget, is going to have to make some pretty tough choices. It might be that she'll look at things like tax rises in order to plug some of the gap, but that's unlikely to be enough on its own. And what it means is that there are going to have to be some very difficult decisions on spending. And where, you know, the sort of axe will fall for spending, we're not sure. But it's not going to be easy, and it's definitely going to be a very constrained fiscal environment. Some of that's because of the sort of high inflation environment that we're in at the moment. Things are costing a lot more to deliver than was previously thought, which essentially means the Scottish Government is able to do less. That's definitely driving some of this. And some of this is about choices the government is making, and perhaps we can get into some of those choices in a sec. But there's no doubt that it's going to be pretty difficult for them to balance the books on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this is not like completely new information. Like the Scottish government knew that this was going to be an issue all the way back in May when they announced the medium-term fiscal financial strategy. And back then, the projection was already a £1.5 billion gap. There was some improvement, so the Scottish government has to kind of reconcile how much they thought they would collect in income tax a few years ago compared with how much they actually did collect. That was going to be in the region of £700 million, and now it's forecast to be under 400. So that's obviously good news. They also can borrow more for those kinds of reconciliations because of the fiscal framework review over the summer. That also makes it easier. They've also tapped into the Scotland Reserve a bit more. That's eased things a little bit. But on the other hand, as Mari was saying, like, things are costing more to deliver. In particular, pay is a big issue. Pay awards were higher than was budgeted for. That means that on an ongoing basis, you have higher costs, and that contributes to the funding gap being larger next year, and kind of brings us back to the £1.5 billion that we had back in May.
Yeah, and in particular on pay, I mean, the assumptions that were in the medium-term financial strategy in May, you know, did seem pretty optimistic in terms of what was likely to happen to the pay bill, both in the current financial year and in subsequent financial years. There's no doubt that that has been higher than expected. And even the assumptions that we've then included, which is the high scenario from the medium-term financial strategy, still look like it would be very easy to see that, the pressures might be even larger than that. So, you know, we've done our best to estimate what this gap might be based on what's available kind of publicly. But it could be that it's even bigger than that, depending on what might happen to pay.
And there is a further complication here. I know this is not sounding any easier for the Scottish government, but I'm afraid some of the decisions that have been made about balancing this year's budget kind of store of problems for the following year, because the Deputy First Minister went to the Scottish Parliament to announce a lot of savings that were going to be made. Listeners can't see, but I'm making air quotes, because a lot of the savings are actually, you know, deferrals of spending into next year. And that means that if you already have over £1 billion more committed spending than you had revenue for, then you are in a position where that is just not a plausible way of planning for next year. And so you end up in a situation where, yes, they might look like deferrals and you might say they are deferrals, but actually either a lot of those are actual cuts or you're going to have to spend less in other areas to make up for the fact that you've deferred the spending into the year in which you have a funding difficulty.
So in terms of setting up the fiscal environment, what role did the autumn fiscal the autumn budget statement play? Did that make things harder for Scottish government? Was it sort of as expected?
I mean, it did feel a little bit over the summer, subsequently to the medium-term financial strategy being presented by the Scottish government. Then you sort of... Obviously, opposition parties and so on were asking the DFM and the chamber, well, sort of, how are you going to deal with this? You know, she said this is a very difficult situation, and she said, you know, obviously I'm not going to give you my budget as May. That'll be in December, which is fair enough. But then what we saw over the summer was further announcements and more spending, on top of what had been assumed in the medium-term financial strategy. We saw, you know, spending for the NHS announced as part of the programme for government, and subsequently, and we saw spending on a council tax freeze as well announced at the party conference. So these sorts of announcements happened subsequently, which obviously only sort of add to the spending pressures in 24-25. And then there was also some good news for the Deputy First Minister in terms of the income tax receipts over the summer were better than was expected. However, all of that still left a significant funding gap, and we've still got these spending announcements becoming thick and fast. It did feel a little bit like the government were hoping that the autumn statement would result in a bunch of spending announcements by the UK government that would generate consequentials and therefore help. Now there was a few consequentials from what was announced at the autumn statement, principally for next year, generated by the UK government's decision to continue a business rates relief for retail, hospitality and leisure businesses, which isn't in place in Scotland. So that did generate some consequentials, but it was very minor in the scheme of things. So essentially the very tight environment at the UK level is feeding down into the Scottish level, and you know, if the Scottish government are hoping it's going to get them out of their hole that they're in, it's not. And the outlook looks even tighter for future years at the moment. We commented at the time of the autumn statement that the outlook for spending doesn't look believable at the UK level. It either means swinging public service cuts in a high inflationary environment, or, you know, these spending limits, as pretty much always happens, actually, are breached by government. And they will actually spend more than they're saying they will now. So, you know, it does look like it's a pretty tight fiscal environment for the Scottish government, even past the current budget year that we're talking about now. But essentially, it just meant that if the government was hoping that they would get a lot more money from the op statement, their hopes were dashed when that was announced.
So you've mentioned a few times now new spending commitments that Scottish government have made. Can you talk a little bit more about those? So we've got, you know, funding council tax freeze, public sector pay, and stuff like that.
So the council tax freeze that was announced by the First Minister during the SNP conference. Now, the commitment then was to fully fund the freeze. That means compensating local authorities for the funding they would have received had they been able to increase council tax as they intended to begin with. It's very complicated to know how much they really were going to increase it by, obviously, because, you know, it's something that hadn't happened to begin with. But previous years provide a good guide of how much that increase might have been. And it was about five, depending on how you calculate it, it's around 5.2 to 5.4% in previous years, and we calculate that replicating that would cost, together with the fact that there was a consultation on increasing the multipliers for the highest band properties, fully funding that would cost in excess of £300 million. When the funding gap was there to begin with and was pretty large, this just kind of enhances that and makes it even more difficult. On pay awards, like there's definitely been an approach to try and mitigate the fact that there have been strikes in the public sector. In fact, there have been fewer days lost to strikes in the public sector in the most recent months in Scotland, for example, than in England, where doctors and nurses went on strike over the summer. That means that more people can be seen and more procedures can take place, but it also does mean that you're kind of baselining higher pay into future years. And this is an ongoing cost because, you know, these are consolidated and for the most part consolidated pay awards that mean not only are you paying more this year, but you're also paying more next year. And we did a bit of a look at how this is kind of translated into employment growth in the NHS in Scotland, and found that actually employment growth has been much lower in Scotland than it has been in the UK as a whole. And you know, there's many reasons why that might be the case, but one of them is if you've got an allocated budget and you're increasing your average pay by more, that means you can employ fewer people. It's just maths.
How much of that will carry over then into revenues? So what's the prospect for income tax revenues and other types?
The prospect for income tax revenue, like for the UK, is much healthier than it was, at the time of the March budget or at the time of the MTFS in May. And why is that? It's because because inflation is higher for longer than was expected at that time, which feeds through into higher wages, which in turn feeds into higher income tax. And at the same time, both the UK and Scottish governments are freezing thresholds. So we get this phenomenon called fiscal drag, which pushes more people into tax as their wages rise, given that the thresholds are frozen in cash terms, and also pushes more people into higher rates of tax. So this significantly increases the tax take that the both the UK and Scottish governments will be getting. And the outlook for Scotland's slightly better because we have higher tax rates in Scotland than the rest of the UK, that the effect is slightly exaggerated in Scotland, which means in a net basis the Scottish budget's a little bit better off because of this. So that is what we'll see. It will be interesting to see the impact that things like public sector pay awards are having on the income tax take as well, and whether the Scottish Fiscal Commission in their analysis sort of try and estimate or separate out this effect that government decisions on public sector pay are having in terms of the tax that you then take into the exchequer again, and to what extent those things are kind of balancing each other out. It is likely to be considered by the Fiscal Commission as what we would call a sort of a second round effect. So it's not just that the pay awards cost money, but it may be that in yielding a higher tax take as well, they can then sort of rebound into government revenue. So it's an interesting sort of modelling challenge to think about how these things can also benefit the exchequer through giving higher pay awards.
And so there's an interesting part of the report that goes through the current structure of income tax. So Joao, I'm hoping you can talk a little bit about that section and what are some of the incentives maybe to change the income tax structure a little bit.
Sure. So the income tax structure in Scotland, well, it kind of interacts with UK reserved powers. And the issue is that there's essentially two income taxes in the UK and in Scotland as well, which are income tax and national insurance contributions. And we kind of focus on employees, which are the bulk of the labour force. But, there's also national insurance contributions on for self-employed people. But just talking through employees first, if you are on, say, £45,000 in the rest of the UK, you pay you pay basic rate, which at UK level is 20%. And you also pay that higher rate of national insurance contributions, which is 12%. So your marginal tax rate, which is what we call like the combined amount of tax that you pay on the last pound you earned, is 32%. Is that going to drop to 30% next month after the announcement by the Chancellor at the autumn statement? In Scotland, though, because the higher rate threshold has been frozen at £43,662, but just say £43,500 for ease, you actually get tipped into the 42% bracket for income tax purposes. But because the threshold for national insurance contributions is the same at UK level, so it's £50,000, that means that you end up in a situation where you pay 42 plus 10, so it's 52%, so more than 50% of your earnings get deducted in tax. And then that kind of drops away the further you a bit further once you get past the threshold. So that drops back down to 42 plus 2, which is the higher rate of national insurance, so 44% in Scotland. So that means that the incentives are not exactly in line with what you'd expect from a well-designed tax system, because if you want progressivity, and that is a generally accepted principle of how you design an income tax system, this is not delivering it, because people on the mid 40,000s are paying more than people in the low 50,000s. Now, there's other bits of the system that aren't progressive, but this one in particular is in the control of the Scottish government. So what we've done in the report is kind of explored how you could design a system that might have slightly different rates, but yield the same amount of revenue, but have less distortionary effects on people's decisions. Because the issue is that, you know, people might, for good reason, not feel it worthwhile for them to work as many hours or go for that extra promotion, especially, you know, if they're going up the pay scale at that end, at that bit of the income distribution. And then that can have very long-term effects on, like, them not having gone up. Because people tend to increase their pay quite a lot at the beginning of their career, and then it kind of stabilizes as they continue working. So if you discourage people from going for the extra bit of income there, it could have long-lasting consequences. And you could design a system that gives you the same amount of revenue, which is the point that we're trying to make, and does not have this.
Yeah, because the important thing about that is, you know, it's on the next pound you earn. It's, you know, the marginal pound you earn, not the whole, you know. So we're not saying that someone that obviously on 45,000 pays more tax than somebody at, you know, 55,000. The 55,000 person still pays more tax. It's about how much you pay on the next pound that you earn. And all of the evidence would suggest that does drive quite a lot of behaviour. But, well, if I earn another £1,000, I'm only going to get this much of it in my hands. So is it worth me earning that extra £1,000? So, you know, that is quite a powerful incentive in terms of, you know, the way people think about the money in their pocket. And so it's just that part of the report is really, you know, you could get rid of this if the Scottish government could get rid of this if they wish to, and here's some ways they could do it that would be sort of revenue neutral. So the fact that this sort of anomaly has been introduced into the tax system is probably not great for labour market incentives at that bit of the income distribution. There are other kinks in the income tax schedule that aren't of the Scottish government's making, such as at the 100,000 plus, where the personal allowance is withdrawn, which means somebody who's earning 110,000 has a higher marginal tax rate than someone who's earning 200,000. You know, those are problems that are definitely an inefficiency in the tax system, which are of the UK government's making. But this one in particular is of the Scottish government's making, and they could do something about it if they wished. I don't think anyone really intended that somebody would be paying higher rate tax plus the higher rate of NICs at the same time when income tax was devolved. It was just sort of something that wasn't really thought about.
And so is that something that we're just highlighting in the report? Is that something that we might expect them to say something about on Tuesday or do something about?
I don't think they'll do anything about it on Tuesday. I mean, I think we've been trying to highlight this as a kind of, I suppose it's an inefficiency in the current tax schedule, and it might be causing distortions perhaps in labour market incentives. And so I think it's important as people who analyse the economy that we point these things out. I'm hoping it's sort of, it can be difficult with this sort of thing because it sounds like quite a technical argument. And when we're sort of talking about things like marginal labour market incentives and things like that, it can sound quite technical. But, you know, I think this is about the efficiency of the tax system, and so it's important to have the debate. Unfortunately, I think the level of the higher rate threshold does seem like it's quite a kind of politically charged thing. And people think a lot more about where that threshold is as opposed to the marginal rate that people are actually getting taxed on. And the research finds that if you talk to people about things like the different tax bands and that sort of thing, people think that when you're in the higher rate that you get that sort of rate taxed on all of your income, not just the income that's above the threshold. So, you know, there is sort of generally limited understanding of the income tax schedule. And, you know, that's fair enough. It's all very complicated, and probably nothing of what I've just said in the last 2 minutes helps make it sound any less complicated.
But to my view, is what this highlights is, as you said, Mari, that this is unlikely to have been intentionally designed to be this way. And one of the pillars in the medium-term financial strategy was a strategic approach to tax, and this does not seem exactly to match that. Now, the Scottish government, as we discussed before, has got loads of other pressing issues, which you might want to focus on. But at the moment, seems very much to be kind of living in kind of like a balancing each budget as it comes, rather than thinking necessarily through how do we want things to look in 5 years' time. And I understand that there's complications in that, and funding from the block grant from the Treasury is a large part of the budget, and obviously that makes it harder to plan when you don't have a spending review. But the fact that it's hard isn't necessarily an excuse not to do it, in my view anyway.
So that sort of leads me to one of the other options, which is usually you'd expect government to be able to borrow, but Scottish government's powers of borrowing are limited. So how does that play into maybe a little bit of short-termism?
It definitely makes it more likely that you're going to kind of look at the next 12 months rather than the next 5 months. As you said, the powers are limited. They do exist to some extent, so the Scottish government is allowed to carry over a small proportion of their allocation in the Scotland Reserve, which dip into it, and it is doing that this year on the resource side. It is also allowed to borrow for capital investment, and it has done plenty of that. It is now nearing in the forecast over 80% of the cap on borrowing. So that, you know, those are some levers, but it's not the same as the Treasury. And obviously that means that it's harder to plan longer term, and there'll be a lot more shifting of things in and out of the budget. That is understandable. But I think one thing that would be helpful in that regard would actually be more transparency about how that gets done and how things get allocated throughout the year, because we had almost scavenge through the letter from the Deputy First Minister to the Finance Committee to try and understand whether something is a permanent cut or whether it's a deferral and what impact it's going to have. And there are things like the employment support cuts that, if you read the letter, it makes it sound like nothing's going to happen because you've withdrawn £10 million from their budget, which seems kind of unbelievable. And why were you doing it in the first place if that's really true? And then there were other things like the £30 million cut to the mental health budget, which, you know, someone picked up in the newspaper a few days ago, but it's actually been in the public domain technically since the 21st of November. It's just, it's really hard to actually troll through it and know what's happening.
Yeah, so anyone who's tried to look at something like the autumn budget revision, which is supposed to set out how the budgetary position has shifted since the budget was passed, you know, prior to the start of the financial year. And then coupled with that, for the last 2 years, there have been these statements from the finance secretary, Shona Robeson this time, John Swinney, in 2022, setting out emergency in-year cuts, some of which have already been included in the ABR, some of which haven't been, trying to understand how these two things relate to each other. You know, we found it really difficult to sort of reconcile those and really understand what's happening. So, I mean, we do this all the time, and we have found it really difficult to understand how these things relate to each other and where we are in terms of the current budgetary position. We've tried to set it out as best we can, but, you know, it's really difficult. So, I mean, there is a real lack of transparency around sort of what's happening. And, you know, presenting cuts to a budget as not really having an impact does seem pretty unbelievable. And I don't think it's particularly helpful for a kind of trust in these sorts of announcements. If it's a budget cut that has to be made, then that's fair enough. But pretending it won't have an impact seems to be not very transparent.
Well, I think we're about ready to wrap up, but I'd like to ask both of you to tell people one thing that you think they should be looking out for on Tuesday. So if they're kind of paying attention to one thing, what should that thing be?
So I think what I'm going to be looking for is what's happening on the capital side. So as we set out in the report, there's big challenges for the capital plans that the government had. Now, we all know that, you know, through the pandemic and so on, governments all over the world have had trouble, you know, with the capital programmes. Like, lots of them were cancelled and obviously weren't able to proceed through COVID. And then as the economies around the world have emerged from COVID, prices have gone through the roof, like way higher than the headline inflation for inputs to, you know, construction and other works. And just getting things has been really difficult as well. So everything costs, you know, maybe twice as much as it did prior to the pandemic. So governments, you know, everywhere are struggling with this. Basically, the cost of capital projects has absolutely rocketed. And it is likely that the government will not be able to do some things that it had committed to previously. So really, it'll be interesting to see what detail is released about, for example, the sorts of transport projects that the government have previously committed to and whether they'll be able to proceed with them, and how transparent they're going to be on Tuesday about, you know, the sort of impacts that that's likely to have. I know you said one, but the other thing I'd be looking for, and I hope I don't steal your one, is also to what extent we get anything about past 2024-25. It's very difficult for the Scottish Government here. It is. You know, it's quite difficult to believe what the UK Government have presented for past 2024-25 at the moment, which does have a direct bearing on the Scottish Government's budget. So it is difficult, but it will be interesting to see what they say about what they think might happen in the coming year's budget. And if many more things are going to be deferred again into that.
That sounds important, so I'll let you have two.
I was hoping to also get two. Well, okay. Very lenient host. Okay. But first of all, I'm really looking forward to seeing to what extent the council tax freeze, if it does go ahead, is funded to local government, because, you know, we just kept getting the same line being brought out saying, you know, it will be fully funded. It will be fully funded with no costing attached to it. As I said before, we think it will be in excess of 300 million. It's been interesting to see if that does turn out to be the case. The other thing is we were talking about strategic approach to tax, but the fact that it's actually very hard to do that in the current context. And there's been some discussion about a potential new ban on income tax above £75,000. That's been heavily speculated in the media. We've actually got some analysis in the report about how much that might raise. And this kind of has been presented as like a solution to the funding gap. And, you know, we estimate that putting an extra 2p on people earning between 75,000 and 125,000 would raise about £40 million after we account for behavioral impacts. So that's not nothing, but you know, it's 40 million in 1,500 million. So that might help you at the margin if you're trying to really make things add up, but all the attention will probably be on that, but actually much more of the action will be on the spending side. It'll be interesting to see how the government plays that out versus what they actually do in the budget.
Okay, so a lot to look forward to on Tuesday. And as I said, we've put out a budget report, and I'm sure everyone will be rushing off to read it. It's now on our website. And we will be commenting and responding to the Scottish budget all week next week. So thank you to Mari and Joao for joining me. Thanks for joining us on this podcast. Until our next Fraser Valander podcast, we'll see you then.